Ziva, compulsive overeater. Thank you for having me. And if you heard my story before, then unfortunately, not a lot changed. So you'll have to hear it again. With some, maybe some, I work the program all the time in new ways. So let me just start by saying that I joined the program when I was 29, shy of 30, and I'm now 75, and I have 18 and a half years of abstinence. So if you do the math, you will know that my story is a story of recovery from relapse. Because for many, 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 many years, I was in and out of relapse. So let me take a few minutes just to start at the beginning. I was born in Israel. My mother was the only survivor of 40 family members, meaning she lost all her brothers, sisters, nephews, nieces, parents, and she survived. But as she told me later in life, when we healed our relationship, she really died with them. So when I was born, I had a mother who never smiled, who was never happy, and who never shared joy. And when you're a little kid, you don't have the ability to have empathy. When you are 2 and 3 and 4, you can't say, "Oh my God, my mom, I feel so bad for her." No. When you're that age, if you don't get a parent that looks into your eyes and smiles, then the only way to interpret it is that something is wrong with me. And I believe the reason I'm sharing it is I believe that that's when my self-hate was born, at birth. And as I grew up, that self-hate became stronger. I did learn at a very, very early age that there is one thing that makes me feel better, and that's food, especially comfort food. When I put it in my tummy, I feel loved, I feel comfort, I feel joy, and that's how my eating disorder started. Now, in the 40 years I've been in program, I've heard different stories, people who came from beautiful, functional families. So it's not like this is the only reason, but I'm sharing today just my story. So at a very early age, I used food in a way that really saved me. And I think that it was around my teen years that I crossed the line from using food to abusing food. That was the point in which I ate to the point of hurting my body and hurting my soul. I will fast forward because, if I go by year, 75 years, we'll be here until tomorrow morning. So I will fast forward. I was in my early 20s when I met who became my husband. And the whole relationship and marriage surrounded around my weight. If I lost weight, I was great. And if I gained weight, I was disgusting. Later on, I found out that he was a gay man and he wanted me to look like a gay boy, which I could never look like that. And I will just do a full disclosure and close that circle. Years after we divorced, I fell in love with a woman and I've been married to her now for 15 years. But at the beginning, that was not the story. The story was that he was a gay man. I didn't know it at the time. And my weight was the center part of either rejection or acceptance. And when I was 29, already had one child, I joined OA. At the beginning, I joined it in Israel, and the program 40 plus years ago, we didn't have any literature in Hebrew. Most of us didn't speak English. The first book that was translated, funny enough, is the book Food for Thought. That was the only literature we had. And we just, we read some things, we spoke. It was mostly for me at the time, a club that I related to with members that I understood me, but I didn't understand anything about recovery. And then we immigrated to the United States. And the day I remember there was a big convention in Israel, and Roseanne, the woman who started OA, was there. And I told her, you know, I'm moving to Los Angeles in a few months. And she said, call me the minute you land. I'll tell you about good meetings. So I called her. She told me about great meetings. And that started my journey in the program. And I would just say that the reason I was in relapse for 27 years, I want to summarize it so I go to the recovery. The reason I was in relapse for all those years, I think, were three reasons. One is I understood the program. I understand the program, so you don't need to teach me. I'm smart enough. I understand it, and I will read it. And you know, I was not open and willing and humble. I knew everything better than anyone. That's number one. Number two, the people in the program who had what I wanted had only one thing in common. Brittany, I saw the time. They had only one thing in common. They were different gender, different profession, different religions. They had one thing in common. They were willing, just willing, to be on a spiritual path. And I was not willing to be on a spiritual path because I grew up and my mom said, if there was a God, my family will be around us now. So we were never allowed to practice anything religion, no temple, no nothing. So when you talked about step three and God, I was like, just give me a break. I'll do step one. I'll do step two. I'll even write an inventory. I'm very self-reflective, but just don't talk to me about God. So that's the second reason, because the only thing, as I said, that people who had real recovery had in common is the willingness, just the willingness to be on a spiritual path, and I had none. And because I didn't have a higher power or a God, I also couldn't sit through any discomfort. And when I say discomfort, it's not just sadness, it could be joy. Any feeling that is above a certain threshold, I need to eat in order to bring it down to the level that I can tolerate it. So I moved through the program for 20 years and I did many four step and I went to meetings everywhere. You know, I would like drive hours. I lived in New York, I lived in Massachusetts. I would drive hours to hear the most amazing speaker, and then I wanted to get abstinent vicariously because I listened to them. And I didn't really understand that in order for me to be abstinent, I need to sit through a lot of pain and discomfort, just like they did. I never heard a speaker who had long-term abstinent who said, my life is amazing. I don't know what pain is. I never felt discomfort. No, everybody lived life that had a lot of shadows and shades, and I couldn't do it. So then I'm now abstinent almost 18 years, not 2007. Yes. So a year earlier, I read a book that I will not mention because it's not an OA literature, but it was this person who was a spiritual leader. His little son had cancer and died. And he said, how can I come to terms with God? And he said his only way of continuing his belief is the belief that when bad things happen, God cries. And when I heard it, something shifted at me. God is not in charge for anything bad that happens in the world. God is not in charge for what happened to my mother. God is not in charge with anything. God cries when those things happen. And that's what I chose to believe in. And that started my recovery. Because I became willing to believe that there is something out there. I don't want, sometimes, you know, I call it different names, but that there is something that is loving and kind that can help me. And that started really my journey of recovery. So in the last, you know, 18 years of recovery, I want to talk about perfect 10 minutes. What happened in that time? So first of all, you know, At the beginning, I had a hard time finding my higher power, so I just listened to you with an open heart and I tried your higher power. So if somebody said, my higher power is nature, I'll try it. I love nature and I do believe that it's a power greater than myself. If you said that whatever you said, I tried. And whenever I talk to people, all I wanted to know is tell me about your spiritual journey. Tell me who is your higher power. And I heard a lot of things that worked and a lot of things that didn't work for me. And over time, my higher power became embracing mother. It's the mother I never had, but it's the mother that lives inside me. And before she died, I was able to make amends to her and to heal the relationship with her, which was absolutely beautiful. And unfortunately, I lived all my life without that relationship, but at least she continues to live inside me. And I even have a picture on my wall of her holding me as a baby. And it's something that I look at a lot. So when I say embracing mother, what does an embracing mother do? And I, by the way, dedicated my entire life to work with little children and parents. And that's how was one way for me to heal that part in me. So what does a good mother do? A mother is embracing and loving and kind and not judgmental and supports you when you do something well and encourages you. And if you make a mistake, she's never angry with you. She's just loving and kind and says, okay. Or as I used to tell my son when he was a perfectionist and he was always upset when he made mistakes. And I always said, Mikey, who invented the eraser? And he always said, I don't know. And I said, do you think a child invented it or an adult? And he said, an adult. And I said, right, you know why? Because adults make mistakes. So that's the embracing mother. Now, I must say that there are many ways of working the program. And in my years of relapse, whenever I was imperfect in my food, I would start counting again. The minute I made a mistake, I started counting again. Now I feel that recounting every time you sleep is co-signing with the disease. And why am I saying it? Because my disease is waiting for me to say, you know what? You had a bunch of whatever yesterday. That's it. You need to start fresh. And then I will tell my disease, okay, let's go out for a month and eat all the things I didn't eat in 18 years and then come back. So I don't co-sign with the disease. There are certain things in my recovery that are black and white. I did not have a dessert in 18 years. I didn't touch one. I didn't taste one. No. However, did I eat imperfectly? Absolutely. Did I have some meals that were big? Absolutely. Or as I say, if you knock on my door unannounced and I'm in the middle of a meal, probably most days I'll open the door and invite you in and say, come join me. Look, this is what I'm eating. And some days, if you come unannounced, I won't open the door because I'm standing by the sink, shoving my lunch in a way that I don't want you to see. So does it mean that I need to count again if I had an imperfect lunch? No. I'm on a journey of recovery. And what are the things that I do in the last 18 years and more so in the last, I would say, few months that are helping me? So, of course, I'm sponsoring, I'm being sponsored, I work the steps all the time. I'm right now again on step five. It's like I finish it, I start another way. So that's number one. But the other thing that I found is very helpful for me is when I am in a shaky place, I call someone so that that person can help me hold my commitment. So, for example, yesterday I spent the last 2 days with my grandkids, ages 2 and 5. And yesterday after dinner, they said, can we have ice cream? So we went to the ice cream and my grandson, who calls me Shasha, said, Shasha, you don't eat ice cream. Do you want to just taste mine? And I said, no, I can't eat it. He said, you can just lick the top. I said, thank you. I can't eat it because, and I said to him, Because many years ago, I ate ice cream and I really liked it, but I couldn't stop. And then my tummy hurt. So I can't eat it now. So before we went to the ice cream place, I reached out to a fellow who is on the screen. I even sent her a picture of the two grandkids with their ice cream. And I said to her, I'm just making a commitment that I'm not having any. I didn't plan on having it. I haven't had ice cream in 18 years. But by sharing it with another person, it felt like she's holding the commitment with me. And it made it easier than when I left, I knew like, wow, that was helpful. So that's a tool that I'm using now much more than I ever used before, which I call bookending. So when there is something emotional going on and I know that I might struggle, I reach out to somebody I trust and I tell them what's going on. If I have an imperfect meal, and again, ice cream I don't eat, so there is no imperfect. But if I have a meal that I had a little too much or I ate it too fast, or I reach out to my sponsor. And the only thing she responds is, you are witnessed with love. That's her response. She never makes a comment, nothing. So that's the other thing. I also connect to my higher power through, do I have only 3 minutes, Brittany? 3 minutes. 3 minutes and I'm done. Oh no,
3 minutes and 30 seconds.
okay. So another thing that I do the two-way prayer. I reach out to my embracing mother when I am in turmoil. And usually I get very loving, sweet, supportive answers. And I follow them. And usually she ends the letter with some guidance for the day. And the guidance could be as small as make sure you take a walk today, or make sure you go to the pool, or get like I get instructions and I follow them. What else do I do? Yes, the two-way prayer. I send the 10 step every night, and the 10 step, the format that I'm using or that my sponsor is using, and if anybody wants that format, I'll be happy to send it to you, also asks a lot of questions about, was I honest today? Was I self-seeking today? Was I humble today? Was I afraid today? So that helps me daily, to keep a score about about what I did right and what there is also a part in my step that is there something you would have liked to do differently today? Is there somebody you need to make an amend to? So I'm constantly working the program. And when I became abstinent 18 years ago, I didn't want to do it every day. I wanted to do it once and then sit on my laurels. And now I know that there are no laurels in this program. This disease will be my disease until I die. And I'm fortunate and lucky to have a solution that makes me be in a room with amazing people from all over the world and to stay in recovery. What could be better? And my relationships with my children, with my grandchildren, with my wife have never been better. And that's all because of you, because of the program, and because of the guidelines for how to live in recovery. Thank you.